good morning. Good morning to you. Over recent weeks, as we prepared for Easter, we spent time in the book of Mark journeying with Jesus towards Jerusalem. And then over Easter, we spent time reflecting on God's perfect love poured out on the cross for us. And then last Sunday, we celebrated the reality and the hope and the power of the resurrection. And today we're going to revisit Resurrection Sunday through the eyes of two of Jesus' followers who are very briefly mentioned in the book of Mark, but their story is told in more detail in the Gospel of Luke. And as we'll read, while in the build-up to Easter, Jesus deliberately set his face to journey towards Jerusalem, we find our two characters today on Easter Sunday deliberately walking in the opposite direction. So if you've got a Bible, please go to Luke chapter 24, and we'll be going, if you keep a finger in there during the talk, because we'll be going back and forward to it. But also the words will come up on the screen for us as well. So Luke 24, starting at verse 13. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of the women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they didn't see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going farther. But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true. The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread." It's quite a story. Our two friends today, they'd found themselves in the midst of a bewildering situation. The only thing they knew for certain was that Jesus had died. That was the only certain thing they knew. Although in the time leading up to Jesus' death, it's likely that they would have heard Jesus in some way talk of, in different ways where he'd shared about that he would die and on the third day rise again. But they certainly, that morning, had heard the reports of the empty tomb and the reported vision of angels. But far from being inspired or hopeful at these reports, they were, as the passage says, downcast. So much so that they'd simply left Jerusalem. They didn't see things as the women who'd been to the tomb saw them. They saw a different picture in the same situation. And it reminds me of a journey that my family and I took back in 2014 in Jamaica. So we weren't on the road to Emmaus, we were on the road to Ocharias. And we'd been visiting my wife Donna's family, that's the road there. And we'd been visiting Donna's family, and we were being taken across the island to Montego Bay to get the plane home. And so with a friend of the family, we set off in a minibus on our journey, which was supposed to take about 3 hours. And so the friend had decided that we would use the brand new highway, the one that was on the picture behind me. And it had just been built through the mountains and the hills in the centre of Jamaica. The only slight drawback was that this new toll road, although completely finished, hadn't been officially opened. And so although people were allowed to drive on it, there was a caveat. And the caveat was there was no roadside assistance if you broke down. You can see where this is going. And so we set off in our minibus. Apparently the only people that day who decided to try the adventure of this new highway. There was no one else on the road. And about half an hour into the journey, on a particularly hilly part of the road, steam started pouring out of the front of the minibus and we ground to a halt. So we all got out and we were standing on the side of this otherwise unoccupied mountain road. And I can still visualise Donna and our oldest son Nathan standing by the side of the road in apparent quite good spirits with their hands in the air praying, words to the effect of, "Dear Lord Jesus, we trust you, please get us to the airport on time. Amen." And if I'm honest, in that moment, I took what I saw as a more practical approach to the situation. My mood might even have been described as downcast. And I was working on the assumption that there was no way we were going to get to the airport on time. And so I was trying to work out in my mind, how were we going to pay for new flights that probably wouldn't be at least till the next day? Where would we stay that night? And where, you know, how would we be covered on the travel insurance? And if anything, my faith-filled travel buddies with their relaxed demeanour were a slight source of irritation to me in that moment. Anyway, within a few minutes of Donna and Nathan's prayer of petition, out from the distance, we saw this police car coming up the road. And out stepped from the car, who we discovered was the Deputy Commissioner of Traffic Police for the whole of Jamaica, who assessed the situation, called the tow truck, had the minibus lifted onto the tow truck, and he personally escorted us to the end of this highway. And when we got there, he flagged down this minibus taxi, who the driver of whom apparently he happened to know. And so he commandeered the taxi to take us on the next leg of the journey. And through a sequence of further events, we eventually arrived at Montego Bay Airport only 5 minutes later than the recommended check-in time. And as Donna and I reflected later that day about standing on that mountain road, Donna said to me that in the midst of all that was happening, it hadn't occurred to her that we might miss the plane. I had to admit to her, it hadn't occurred to me that we might be on it. And so, same situation, different perspectives. I wonder today, as we continue to reflect on the death and in particular the resurrection of Jesus, what's your perspective? How do you see it? Do you come to the story with certainty or confusion, with assurance or conflict, with belief or with doubt? Before we dig into some more detail of the passage today, there's one thing that I've been struck by as I've read it over and over the last couple of weeks. And it's how on this most remarkable day in human history, the risen Jesus chooses to seek out and spend the bulk of the day with these two disillusioned followers of him who'd chosen to walk away. And I believe that whatever state we find ourselves in today, the risen Jesus is seeking us out too. Wherever you find yourself today, Jesus is seeking you out. And so today I want to explore briefly, what was it that meant that our two friends couldn't see what was unfolding in front of them? They couldn't see that what was happening and what they were experiencing was the most pivotal events in human history, the suffering and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. And in this passage, we find two things that can so easily happen to us as well. The first is they didn't understand redemption. And the second is they didn't recognize Jesus. So first, they didn't understand redemption. Now, there are different views on who these two disciples were, who these two people were on the road to Emmaus. But it's clear that what they were is they had been dedicated followers of Jesus, walking and following him for some time. And they had been hopeful that Jesus was the one who had been promised. And they'd been left crushed and perplexed by the events of these last few days. As I said at verse 19, he was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it's the third day since all that took place. Now, for those of us here today who are followers of Jesus, we do have the benefit of hindsight. We know the irony of what they had just said there. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. He was. What is more, it is the third day since all this took place. And it was. And early that morning, there had been a declaration that he had risen. The gospel was there before them, almost hidden in plain sight. Because they saw redemption, in other words, the setting free or the liberation or the deliverance of their people in the context of their immediate circumstance. And their circumstance was that they were part of an oppressed people living under generations of oppressive rule by the Roman Empire. And not only that, the core example that they knew of redemption was from the events recorded in the book of Exodus that they'd been remembering over these last few days through the feast of the Passover. And it was the physical liberation of God's people out of Egypt. And so they couldn't see that the events recorded in Exodus and the prophecies that followed through the scriptures from there were a foreshadow of what was to come through Jesus. But that this liberation, this deliverance, this redemption wasn't from a physical bondage. It was from the ultimate bondage, the bondage of sin. And with that which had marked humankind since what we refer to as the fall. And so Jesus, through his death and resurrection, set us free from sin. He set us free from death. That's what we believe. And in that moment, Jesus sat down with this disillusioned pair, or actually walked with them, and he gave them the Bible study of all Bible studies. As we see at verse 25, he said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." See, all they knew of the Jewish scriptures was culminating in the events that had just taken place. And we don't exactly what Jesus said in that time, in that Bible study, but I think it's likely that he would have pointed to the Psalms, to Exodus, to Deuteronomy, to Job, to Isaiah, to Jeremiah, to Hosea, to Micah, to Daniel, to Zechariah, all of which was pointing towards what was culminating in that moment. All these scriptures point to who Jesus was and what he would do. Like Psalm 118, "I will give you thanks, for you answered me. You have become my salvation. The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. The Lord has done this, and it is marvelous in our eyes. The Lord has done it this very day. Let us rejoice and be glad." He who was rejected, Jesus, was to be the one on whom everything of worth was built. And I can stand or sit here today and look at the two disciples and say, well, how did they miss it? But how easily, more importantly today, do I miss it? How easily do I fail to understand the liberation that I need, the freedom that I need, the redemption that I need? In a world that tells me each day that the freedom I need is to be myself, is to express my truth, is to live my way. And you might think, well, that's a very modern problem. But the reality is, it's just today's outworking or expression of what our problem has been all along. Since the fall, in one way or another, we have believed what Satan has told us. That if we reject God's way, and in so doing reject God, as it says in Genesis 3, we will be like God. Or as it says in Romans 1:25, we exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator. And that exchange that resulted in bondage needed to be reversed. And the exchange was reversed as Jesus hung on the cross, taking on himself the weight of our sin. And through his death and resurrection, he set us free. That is the miracle of Easter. And so the invitation today is for us to see our own need for redemption and to celebrate the redemption that has come through Jesus. As Paul said in his letter to the Colossians at chapter 1, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. And so today we're invited to walk and sit with Jesus so that he might show us all that he has done for us. And so our two friends in our story today didn't at first understand redemption, but secondly, they didn't recognize the risen Jesus. As it said, as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came and walked with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. And it seems to be a strange feature of a number of the resurrection stories that people didn't always immediately recognize Jesus. Like Mary Magdalene, when she was at the tomb, when the disciples went out fishing some days after and Jesus appeared, but they didn't recognize him at first. And then here with our two friends on this journey. And it's not fully explained why some didn't recognize him. But theologians across the spectrum suggest that it was more than just they weren't expecting to see him. N.T. Wright puts it this way. It seems that Jesus' body emerging from the tomb had been transformed. It was the same, yet different. A mystery which we shall perhaps never unravel until we ourselves share the same risen life. But the fact they couldn't recognize Jesus at first seems to have gone with the fact they couldn't recognize the events that had just happened as the story of God's redemption. And I've already touched on that last bit, understanding this story of God's redemption. In other words, understanding what Jesus did. Excuse me, but there's a further invitation to recognize who Jesus is in all his wonder and his beauty and his majesty. And so returning to our story, these two disciples who, after their long walk together and their unplanned Bible study, they urged Jesus, still not recognizing him, to stay with them. And so they prepare a meal for him. And then we read, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? They got up, returned at once to Jerusalem, There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. What an incredible but a very strange part of this story. Not recognizing Jesus, then breaking the bread. At once they recognize him and then Jesus disappears. And there are different interpretations of what is happening in this moment. Some commentators say it was simply the moment that God chose to reveal the risen Jesus to them. He prevented it and then he revealed it. Others say that maybe there was something in the breaking of the bread that awoke a memory in these two disciples, and they recalled maybe breaking bread with Jesus before and that triggered something. Others emphasize that it was in the breaking of the bread that they recognized Jesus, indicating the importance and the mystery that in some way when we celebrate the Lord's Supper together, we're connected with and meet Jesus in a special way. But I was struck this week by listening to N.T. Wright reflecting on this passage. And as he did so, he reflected on how it was that in the breaking of the bread together, that Luke said that at that moment, their eyes were opened and they recognized the risen Jesus. And he referred all the way back to the story in the garden in the book of Genesis, where you might recall the two, Adam and Eve, had chosen to eat of the forbidden fruit. And it said that at that moment, their eyes were opened and they realized their nakedness, that sin had entered the world. And now in this moment, our two disciples, in sharing through the breaking of the bread, Luke says of these two that their eyes were opened. And instead of realizing their shame, as Adam and Eve had done, they recognized Jesus. And whereas Adam and Eve responded by hiding, they responded by turning around and returning to where they had come from, to Jerusalem, and declaring they had seen the risen Jesus. You see, Jesus wasn't just resuscitated like his friend Lazarus had been, who was brought back to life, but someday would have died again. Jesus was resurrected, which means he rose. He's alive today, he's here and forevermore. See, that's what we believe. And the resurrection is central to our faith because it's the vindication of all that Jesus said and did. For then, for now, and our promise for eternity. Tim Keller, the American pastor and writer who died of cancer just under a year ago, many years before his death, put it this way. If Jesus rose from the dead, then you have to accept all that he said. If he didn't rise from the dead, then why worry about any of what he said? The issue on which everything hangs is not whether or not you like his teaching, but whether or not he rose from the dead. That is how the first hearers felt who heard reports of the resurrection. They knew that if it was true, it meant we can't live our lives in any way we want. It also meant that we don't have to be afraid of anything. Not Roman swords, not cancer, nothing. If Jesus rose from the dead, it changes everything. You see, it matters that Jesus rose from the dead because it does change everything. You may be here today and you're not sure what you believe. You don't quite know what to make of all this. And if that's you, I would really encourage you to explore more. To explore more of what it is that Christians claim that Jesus has done. To explore more of who Christians claim Jesus is. Because if it's true, it does change everything. And so if that's you, you may want to consider the Alpha course that was talked about earlier and is coming up in a few weeks. But it may be that today is your day, that within you, you want to make that decision today to follow Jesus. He who came and lived and he died and he rose again and he is present amongst us now. And if that is you, there will be an opportunity to respond when we come to a time of prayer in a few minutes. And as I was reflecting this week, I also thought of those for whom, at some point in your life, as you explored, as you reflected, you made that decision to follow Jesus, you're still a follower of Jesus, and you at points in your life have had that experience of those two disciples. As Jesus unpacked the scriptures, that experience of were not our hearts burning within us. But where you are now, it feels that flame has diminished. And God wants to reignite that fire today. But finally, I'm conscious that there are some here today, and you know that you at some point have actively turned and walked away from Jesus. And as I was thinking this week, the words of a secular song by the band James came to mind. The song's called Sit Down. And in that song, there's a line, and it says, "If I hadn't seen such riches, I could live with being poor." And in your heart, you have known the riches of knowing the risen Jesus. And you know, if you're honest with yourself, that today you are poor. And like the prodigal son, you are longing to come home. And if that's you, the Father's invitation today is to come home because he's waiting for you. And so we're going to, before we go into prayer, we're going to sing one last song. So I just want to invite you to stand if you're able as we do that. And as we enter into worship, whatever state you find yourself in this morning, I just invite you to bring yourself before Jesus and allow him to meet with you as he longs to do.